You're listening to Momentum, a show that helps men succeed in life.
This isn't saying everyone in these sipping waters is this, yes. But there are some traits and characteristics, which when combined with things like our family of origin and our personality type and other things that had a formative and shaping impact on us, these combine and in answer to your earlier question, yes, can have a factor of making us more susceptible to anxiety for sure.
Now, here's your hosts, Tim and Des.
All right, well, welcome to this week's Momentum. It is absolutely wonderful to have you tuning in wherever you may be around Australia. MomentumAustralia.org is our website. Encourage you to have a squeeze around that after the show. But we are so glad and grateful and just excited to be here with you today. And my co-host, Des, is always, once again, at the helm with me. How are you?
I'm really good. Thanks, man. It's a joy to be alongside you and do this ministry with you. It's really cool. But just while I'm talking, let me remind everybody of our CURR line. It's our support line for men, which is 1-800-000-MEN. That's 1-800-000-MEN, which is 636. And this service is brought to us by our friends at Caroline Connections. So you can reach out on that helpline and get help 7 days a week between 9 a.m. and 11 p.m., 1-800-000-MEN.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thanks, Des. And yeah, I encourage you to avail yourself of that. Or certainly, if you're going through a bit of a rough patch at the moment, you might have somebody around you and you go, just reach out, have a coffee, have a lunch, stay connected. That's one of our key themes at Momentum. Just while I mentioned the website, before we move into the show, MomentumAustralia.org, you may have noticed that the website looks a little different in the last few weeks and we've had a bit of an upgrade. So we'd love you to have another look around the website, check it out. There's lots of resources on there to help you on your journey. And of course, if you feel inclined to support us at Momentum, we do things very leanly here. We are run by people just like yourselves who give us occasionally donations. And so if you'd like to help support us so that we can reach men all around Australia through this radio show and podcast, which also goes overseas, MomentumAustralia.org is that website. You know, anxiety is one of the most common mental health conditions in Australia, and it's fairly normal that we might feel anxious from time to time.
Yeah, that's so true. And you know, it's estimated that between 1 in 4 people will experience anxiety at some time in their life. And recent statistics from Beyond Blue say that as many as 3 million Australians are living in some form of anxiety.
When anxious feelings don't go away, happen without any particular reason, or make it hard to cope with daily life, it may be time to seek help. And there's a brand new feature that's just been launched by AIFC. It's called Abound. You can find details at abound.org.au or, of course, their website, aifc.com.au. We're joined by the CEO of AIFC this week on Momentum, Nick Marks. It's great to have you back, Nick. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Tim, and hi, Des, and thank you for having me on again. It's lovely to be with you guys and the opportunity to talk around this really important topic with you, so thank you.
Yeah. I mean, as we start, and, you know, Des mentioned in the intro there, there's guesstimates, I suppose. I mean, we can't put an exact figure on it, but around 3 million Aussies are struggling to some degree with some form of anxiety. I mean, is that, I suppose, surprising for you after the last few years particularly, or in your line of work, are you going, yeah, that's probably not even accurate. It's probably way more than that. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, maybe I have a skewed or a biased view given the line of work, as you said, that I'm involved in. And I think I would say that is conservative.
Yeah.
And particularly even the last few years. And we know there's other data that's out now that's telling us, particularly, say, for example, in 16 to 24 year olds, there's some significant increases in some of the data there around what young people have. And I think young people really felt the brunt of, say, the COVID, those acute COVID years, for example. But I there was a lot of the data was showing it, and a lot of signs and symptoms, if you like, of anxiety on the increase pre-COVID. And I think COVID both it brought about increase. And I think acted, if you like, as an X-ray or a CT scan, sound a bit more effective, in highlighting where it is and bringing it out more into the open, I think.
So if we fine-tune that overall figure then, tentatively of, say, let's just say 3 million right now, and you were saying about the 16 to 24-year-olds, is there an age category that you would say, and perhaps a gender, that would be struggling more than others perhaps, one that kind of spikes or stands out?
I would highlight the particularly the younger generation.
It is that generation.
16 to 24. Yeah. And the Gen Z millennial ages and those coming up, even some of the younger ones. So, and some of the things we can unpack today is, I think, some of our definitions of anxiety and how it works and moves and operates between people is also almost, if you like, some of the hidden nature of it that that belies the data even more, I think. So there is that measurable data in people who would say in a survey or in various forms, yeah, I've experienced anxiety, and you can talk about that, capture it, measure it, and reproduce some data. And then I think there's a whole hidden nature to this of how anxiety moves and operates that is not measured, if you like, that we could perhaps lift a little bit today.
Yeah, no, exactly. And, you know, the Beyond Blue is a good way of analyzing, you know, anxiety for so forth based on their statistics. But, you know, how many people have anxiety in their lives that wouldn't even think about contacting Beyond Blue, who, like men in particular, who just hold it in and bottle it in? You know, that 3 million, maybe 10 million.
Yeah.
You know, based around what's happened with COVID and what's happened with, you know, society in general, you know, the impact of men in society and their reluctance to speak out about their world, you know, I'd be surprised if it wasn't 10, 12 million, truly.
Mm. Yeah. And I suppose defining what that actually looks like for us, right? And we're going to do that in just a moment, because, I mean, a lot of us, to be honest, I mean, we deal with stresses and pressures most days. And I have moments where I feel anxious, but does that mean then I'm struggling with this on a long-term basis? So let's come into a definition in just a moment. But I saw a quote this morning I'm going to share with you guys, and this was on social media. And it says, anxiety is not the enemy. It's a messenger delivering a message from within. Don't try to silence it. Listen to it with compassion and curiosity. Remember, it's a passing sensation, not a permanent state of being. And I thought that was really powerful.
Is that the difference between being anxious and having anxiety? Because I think there's a difference between those two. I think that's a really great quote, by the way.
Yeah.
Good quote, particularly around being curious. I really like that as well.
Yeah.
If we look at the actual definition then of someone, as Des said, I suppose the definition between being anxious and then struggling with anxiety, how would you define the two?
Yeah, I think definitions can be really helpful here. So I think if we talk about anxiety being an excessive anticipation of future perceived threats, let's go with that definition.
Yeah.
Because it's generally future oriented, isn't it? Which can initiate a fight or flight response. And it's usually not of a good thing, though it can be good for us at one level. For example, I remember, if I give you an example, I remember as a younger man surfing, and there really was a shark in the water, and it was probably about 20 or 30 meters away. And so a number of us instantly became very anxious. Other words came to mind at the time, but the anxiety was definitely there. And we chose the flight response, not the fight.
Yes. Yes.
And I think that good was move. Wise as well. Yes. And we got out of the water, thankfully, and quickly. And so that was definitely an anxious moment.
Yeah.
And the anxiety was appropriate, and it helped. However, from back then through to now, I had an ongoing anxiety of a perceived threat of every time I go in the water, I am going to be eaten by a shark, and therefore never went back in the water. I could get on with life, but I wouldn't. That wouldn't necessarily be a reality, or necessarily good for me in that example. But I could manage it. So there's one that can be real in that as I described. And there can be an excessive focus on a perceived threat that is going to happen to me. The acute side of it, so that's more acute anxiety. It's then important to distinguish between a more diagnosable anxiety, if you like, which is known as general anxiety disorder. And that's generally diagnosed by a mental health professional, I should say, and it is. And you're generally experiencing the symptoms of anxiety on more days than you don't experience them. And symptoms can cause significant distress and make it hard to do everyday activities like working, studying, and socializing. And the symptoms last for at least 6 months. Now, that's general anxiety disorder. Mm. Now, that's about 6% of the population. That's very specific, diagnosable, and can often, for example, be require some medication. And then as we have our acute anxiety that I mentioned, and there is a third type that is not talked about a lot, and it's quite simply named chronic anxiety, but the chronic side of it doesn't mean that it's just lasting longer. A chronic anxiety is actually, it is more of a perceived anxiety, and it's more one of emotional process of how anxiety moves in and between people.
Oh, could you explore that a little bit more? Because I'm not sure what that, how you define that.
Yeah, yeah. So it's, this one's not often talked about, but I think it needs to be talked about more. Chronic anxiety is one of emotional processes. So if you think about it, and there's some good work that's been done here over the years by really starting in the 50s and 60s by Murray Bowen, in terms of Bowen's family systems theory, was really taken on to I don't say a next level, but to the next stage, if you like, and really ran with it. A gentleman who was a rabbi, who was a therapist, he was a consultant and leader and speaker and author and a whole bunch of things by the name of Ed Friedman. His seminal work in a book called Failure of Nerve, where he describes this. More recently, the work of Todd Bolsinger, Steve Cuss, as well as done some great work in this area. So I'm sort of standing on some shoulders here, particularly the work of Bowen and Friedman. That's my big disclaimer there. and the chronic anxiety, is it takes place much more day-to-day in our relationship, and this emotional process between two or more people. And so it can happen within just two people, or in families, organizations, and even in societies and our culture, where chronic anxiety takes place or takes hold.
So what drives that? I mean, it just what popped into my mind was, you know, people listening to the news every day, and it's invariably always negative. You know, the days of Brian Henderson saying, you know, good night and has a good news story to end, and those days are gone, and it's all bad news. And it's not news unless it's bad, and that can affect people. Can that lead to chronic anxiety?
Yeah, so it depends what the causative factors are. So it can be, I like the way Steve Cuss describes this in terms of the spaces of chronic anxiety. So it can reside. The first space is in me, just beneath the surface, wanting to come out. And it could be I'll give you some of my examples of how I struggle with this in a moment, but it could be perfectionism, or I could just be, you know, worried about a particular event. Or did Des just give me a funny look? I'm not sure that Des really likes me, and now I'm a bit worried about that. So it's something underneath the surface.
Yeah.
I just jumped to the third space in that example. But it's sitting under the surface in me for whatever reason. It could be the way I operate or my family of origin or something that was done to me at a young age or whatever the case may be. Or it could be a bigger thing like my concern about the climate or where our nation's heading or some global event or situation. It could be that as well. But it sits under the surface in me. The second space is the space between you and me. So I think, for example, in a marriage or a relationship or a friendship, it's between two people, okay? The third one is the space inside the other. So when anxiety is residing in another person, and I use that example, I wonder what they really think of me. I don't think they like me. And so you're thinking about the anxiety in that other person. I should say about the third space, it's really the one we can't do anything about except just let it go in that sense. The first and second and fourth we can. And the fourth space is when there's anxiety between others. Have you ever walked into a room where you just know there's something really off and there's an anxiety? You come into a meeting and it's like, oh, no, this isn't good. There's something going on here, or there's something off here. It's already operating in the room when you come in the real or virtual room these days.
Yeah. At least you know it's not you when you do that.
That's right. you have to tread carefully. And so we can then notice, well, what type of anxiety is going on here? Is this in me? Is it in between me, you know, you and me, two people? Is it inside the other person and I'm concerned about it, or what I think they might be thinking? Or, you know, if you think about that, I'm thinking about what that other person thinking and coming to a conclusion and getting anxious about it. And we've all done that. And then there's the space between the others. And I really like Steve's, I think it's Cuss's quote here, but back to the fourth space is anxiety in others, is the person with the most anxiety has the power in the room.
Yeah, wow.
Wow.
You've ever been in a meeting where you just think about that, and that person, their anxiety is driving the whole flavor of that.
Sets the tone for the meeting, yeah.
It sets the tone. And the other thing about anxiety, I should say, in chronic anxiety, and I think this is actually applicable for all anxieties, it's highly contagious.
Yes.
Highly, more than COVID, highly contagious. And so with chronic anxiety, think of it like a room filled with fumes waiting to go off. Mm. So it's kind of like the air in the room.
Yeah.
That's probably a way to think of it.
Wow.
Versus the acute types, where it's like it might just be in me over, well, I've got a particular life concern at the moment, or, you know, I've got some financial worries and I'm anxious about that, or I have a general anxiety disorder diagnosed and I'm taking medication. They're very real things, and they're definitely of significance. And then there's this chronic type that I'm describing, which is more chronic, means it's an emotional process that can either actually connect people, and it moves between people. It's actually a system, if you like, of two or more people. And you can therefore extrapolate that out to a society.
Wow.
And you can actually have, and this is what authors such as Bowen and Friedman and others, and I would join them in saying, we actually have that, this chronic anxiety operating in our culture very strongly now. And it's not talked about or even necessarily made visible or seen until we lift the lid on it and make this known. But it is very much operating in our many families, organizations, and our culture at large. It's not all bad news, but I think it's just important to be aware of this.
Yeah.
I think, Nick, as always, when you chat and we get into the first part of the show, I'm like, okay, this is a lot deeper than I first expected. And certainly now that we've lifted the lid on just what you've been saying in the last 15, 16 minutes or so, I mean, this is huge, and there's so many different facets to this. We're going to take a short break for the sake of time, but come back and look at some of the sources of anxiety. And of course, then the good news is how we actually can deal with this stuff on a day-to-day basis. So as we take a break, point you to the websites. Again, we're talking with Nick Marks from AAFC, aafc.com.au. We'll give you lots more information about this sort of stuff. And our website too, of course, momentumaustralia.org. We're going to come back with Nick Marks for the second part of exploring this incredible topic and important topic around anxiety. That's this week's Momentum. Stay tuned.
This is Momentum, a show that helps men succeed in life. Find out more at momentumaustralia.org.
All right, well, thanks for joining us. It's Momentum and part two of our show this week with Nick Marks from AIFC, aifc.com.au, by the way. Just jot that down. That's their website. Lots and lots of research and resources about all sorts of different stuff on there that's going to help you on the journey, aifc.com.au. And, of course, our website, momentumaustralia.org. Encourage you to have a squiz around both of those websites after the show. But, you know, we're in this incredible conversation with Nick Marks from AAFC about anxiety. And Nick, you just lifted the lid, I suppose, on some of the different types of anxiety in the first part of the show. And as always, it goes a lot deeper than we first think. So thank you for lifting the lid. I mean, Des and I are now spinning about, wow, where do we take this conversation? But I suppose the obvious one would be for people listening to go, how do we define it in our own lives? How do we look at our lives and look at some of the symptoms or things that might indicate that we might be struggling with anxiety, not just in anxious moments, but on a more permanent basis?
Yeah. Thank you. It's a great question. In terms of how it might show up. So in this context, it's thinking of when that language around where, well, I like to say where anxiety's sort of taken hold of the wheel. Or you're flooded with it. Talking about myself here, or thinking of oneself, it can show up in, you know, very much in our body. As Pete Scazzaro says, you know, our body's a major, not a minor profit, and our body tells us things. So
yeah. I like that.
That's good. Actually. I like that. Yeah.
It shows up in our body. It can be like my mind can be racing, or, you know, it might be like a redness around the neck or heavy chest, or, you know, definitely heart rate and breathing escalate. That's classic responses to anxiety. There's different things when we have this flooded of chronic anxiety, because it depends how it's come about. So it could be internally expectations I have on myself. Actually, let me just give you some examples of how I react is the key word here. It's not responding, I'm reacting. So when I'm flooded with anxiety, it's got the wheel and reactivity has set in due to whatever. It could be, which space do you want to take? Because I think someone's thinking that about me, or I've walked into a room and I feel embarrassed, or the expectations that I might have upon myself, or I'm a perfectionist and it didn't go well, or whatever it might be, I'm now reacting and anxiety's got the wheel. So some of the things I do is it's not so much being right. For me, it's like I'll want to have a solution to every problem. So that becomes bigger in me.
Right.
I'll be overly solutions focused and trying to fix things and make it work. I'll try to be more organized in myself and project that onto other people. I'll judge myself more harshly, and my inner critic will kick in a way that's not healthy, or will say good things. I'll become overly, I have a perfectionist streak, but that then amplifies.
Just one question for you in that regard. So I'm equating that to a marriage, for example, and a husband and wife, where, you know, the husband's trying to do the right thing. He doesn't, you know, he's anxious about his world. And so he overreacts in those ways. And you can see why that would lead to all sorts of arguments and so forth in that family unit. And it's good that you really describe this, because, you know, there'd be so many men listening who just are in that situation with their partners, and, you know, they don't know how to deal with it.
Yeah, that's a great example, Des, of coming back to the fumes in the room. It's waiting there.
Yeah.
And if that anxiety is in me or between us or in my wife, depends which one it is, it's waiting to ignite. And so if I over-amplify whatever it is, some of my tendencies in my reactivity, that could be taken in any number of ways, and generally not positively, particularly if I'm not verbalizing. And we'll get to some of the ways to diffuse it or antidotes in a moment. But if I'm not being, if there's not a self-awareness on my part and I'm not naming any of this and bringing it out, this is what's going on and why I'm not being curious, or back to Tim's quote, or describing what's happening to me, it will generally be taken in a negative fashion, and those fumes can ignite.
Yeah.
Nick, you mentioned early on in the piece about the fact that a lot of anxiety is future focused, right? I suppose it's us thinking about what could happen, I suppose, or the potential of what somebody might be thinking, or what might happen in this instance, or something like that. And this might be then one of the tools for diffusing. So I might be jumping ahead, but I was just curious about that. Does that tend to be where most of the anxiety comes from? It's thinking about the what ifs, I suppose, of the future. And if we bring that back to present moment, is that a good kind of diffuser to kind of get more grounded in the moment, rather than get lost in our head and trying to think ahead and try and control something that at this stage we have no control over?
Yes, given the racing nature of anxiety, the future perceived threat of it, and then my reactivity to it, coming back to it's a great point and question, Tim, is how do I, ways in which, this is the big overarching theme, if you like, of the diffusing it, is how do I be it's coming to be, not perfect, but more so as a calm, which Bowen and Friedman talk about, as a calm, non-anxious, and your word, presence. How do I then be present in the moment and not gone off into what if and all the reactivity and scenarios that could envelop or unfold but probably won't, and coming back to being present, self-aware, and calm. And that's where I can talk about some of these now. It's a great segue. I want us to be kind to ourselves here, because there's some work to be done here, and this is, we're talking about some, you know, this is a solid topic. So let's be kind to ourselves here. But some important things to do are, under that umbrella of calm, aware present, the non-anxious presence, if you like, naming it. Mm. So can I name what I'm feeling and what the causes might be or how I'm even reacting to this? So describing it is good.
Just to jump in, sorry, can you give someone, so I've heard that expression a few times and I like it, but can you give someone a practical example to go, okay, how do I name it? What do I do? Do I just sit with it and then go, I think it's that? Is that simply what naming it is? And I might be dumbing it down and I'm not trying to be rude, but you know, when we say naming it, it's like, okay, well, how do I get to the point where I name it? what does that look like?
Where you're at. So if you can be specific and name, I'm feeling this because of that. I'm worried about that.
Mm. Right. I see.
I'm feeling this way because I'm worried about that. Mm. I'm actually anxious about that, and therefore I can name that, or it could be more general. That's fine. But you start that naming process.
Right. What does that do to the brain then, Nick? When we do that, when we speak that out loud and we go, I'm feeling this because of that, what does that actually then start to do to start to diffuse that whole process in our brain?
I think getting it out of our just, you know, doing laps in our mind is good. So right. Actually verbalizing it and saying it out loud. And the part two to that is with a safe, trusted person is actually sharing it.
Yeah.
Mm. And now that can be in a marriage, a relationship, a friendship. This can also be in the workplace with a, you know, I'm talking about healthy vulnerability here, and with a team, with colleagues. Be wise and discerning, but I'll endeavor to do this with the teams, with my teams at work. So a good question might be to your team is, what do you see me? How do I come across when I'm anxious? Or what do you see in me when you think I'm anxious? How do I behave? Yeah, ask that sort of question. That'll elucidate some responses.
I was going to say that's a brave question to ask. Get ready for some really honest answers.
Yeah.
It's actually a good question for a husband and wife partners to ask each other. Yeah, or say like, yes, you know, I'm feeling this. Yeah, so forth. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, this is how I'm feeling, and this is what I think it's about. Mm. How do I come across to you when I'm like this? And you just start breaking some new ground there.
That's brilliant.
Self-regulating my reactivity is also another one where I can, if I'm able to be aware, you know, consciously aware that I'm reacting to this and that is having a certain effect, an exacerbation effect, and I'm able to regulate myself in that and go, okay, I can see what's happening here. That can be a number of two or three short steps, powerful steps that can start to diffuse this.
Mm. Can I pause just for a moment, Nick, because you've mentioned perfectionism a couple of times, and I'm curious because, I certainly struggle with that from time to time, probably more than I would like to admit, but that did beg the question, and I know we're jumping back a step, but I think it's an important one for people to go, how much then does our personality, our character, our upbringing, the way we're wired in inverted commas, how much does that lead into the potential of us struggling with anxiety? Because I would imagine people who have that perfectionist streak, it would be a logical thing to say, and again, I'm going without statistics, to say then that people who are wired that way probably have more anxiety because they are trying to make everything perfect and potentially control things or look a certain way or whatever. So how much does the backstory, I suppose, impact the leading forward then of we may struggle with this or we're more likely to struggle with this?
Yeah, it's, again, great question. So family of origin is particularly important in this, is our family history, our upbringing.
The modeling from our parents, how they dealt with this stuff.
Modeling and emotional maturity and even things like how our parents did conflict or how did our parents deal with things when things went pear-shaped or there was a major issue in the family or whatever it might be, how did they deal with it? So our upbringing or, say, family of origin is a significant bit. Bowen's work even looked at as where I am in the order of siblings as a factor.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Can you explore that for us, explain that for us? Because I've heard that number twos particularly, there's a stigma around being a number two child. Des is putting his hand up.
I'm number two child as well.
Me too. So let's go there.
It was Bowen, and it came out of Walter Tillman's work around sibling position, who have some common traits and characteristics. So it's not, this isn't saying everyone in these sibling orders is this,
yes,
but there are some traits and characteristics, which when combined with things like our family of origin and our personality type and other things that had a formative and shaping impact on us, these combine and in our soteriology question, yes, can have a factor of making us more susceptible to anxiety for sure. Mm. So Toman and Bowen's work here around, for oldest children tend to gravitate towards leadership positions and younger children prefer to be followers unless the parents disappointed them. Mm. And also research around the matching of spouses and their sibling positions of how they communicate and relate to one another and how they get on, basically. Wow. So there's a whole body of work done here on sibling position. It's not my area of expertise. I know a little bit about it, but it's a whole body of work.
It's fascinating. All that.
Mm. Yeah, it is fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah.
In the few moments we've got left for this show, we're going to get you back next week, just a heads up. Because there's so much about, if you'd like to, that is. But look, we did talk in the backstory before we launched into this week's show about family systems, our workplaces, those sorts of things. And we'd love to unpack that more. We don't have time for that this week. So I think we'll hang that for next week. But just as a final few thoughts before we let this show finish, for people listening right now, and particularly guys, obviously, who have listened to the show and can identify with some of what we're talking about, and they go, yep, I see some of the reactions, or I get these moments, I'm just not sure, you know, what to do or how to feel, or even the fact that then the whole, how do I communicate this to my partner, my wife or whatever. Can you just give us, I suppose, two or three little things to leave the guys with this week to go some positive steps forward in the next few days before we get into part two that they could perhaps explore, think about, take to perhaps ease some of these feelings that they might be feeling?
Yeah, when it comes to chronic anxiety, I think I'd start off again saying, because this is it's a solid topic and area to talk about. So starting off being kind to yourself. Mm-hmm. Ways and opportunities to raise your awareness safely is important. So self-reflection, having conversation with trusted others. Reflecting on our identity is very important. And I would say this as a believer, our identity in Christ. Mm. Is a great opportunity to reflect on that and what it is that I really believe and what might be some of the things that I am anxious about that I may not be even thinking about or might be focusing on in my life that are having a significant impact or more of an impact than perhaps you think they might be. And starting to lean into those and going, exploring them. I think you used that word before, Tim, I think it's really important, is starting to be curious with some of these things. Mm. So it's baby steps to start with, I think, is an important point too, is this isn't going to be, you know, resolved in days, and we're always going to have some level of chronic anxiety with us because it's the world we live in, and we live in anxious times, and it's probably been here since the fall. Mm. And so it's important about taking baby steps, be kind to yourself, and be curious with some of these things in ways that can start to raise our awareness and, as I said earlier, start to name some of these things and share them. And that leads us to being able to self-regulate, not to have a total focus on the self, but it's so that I can regulate myself. Mm. Then I'm going to be able to have a much better chance of being able to lead and serve and help others first. A little bit like the oxygen mask on myself first, so then I can go and help others, not the other way around.
Yes, good. That's really good.
I love, you mentioned the word awareness there and, you know, for momentum, our whole, I suppose, backstory is a couple of things. And one of them is helping men get awareness. The second then is having a conversation in a safe space and getting connected. And all of those three things, I think, go hand in hand. And so, we're super thrilled with the conversation we've had, Nick. There is so much more to explore next week about anxiety. So we're going to come back with Nick Marks from AIFC next week. In the meantime, point you once again to the website, aifc.com.au. Have a look around their website. There is so much on there that will help you on your journey in this topic and many others too. And of course, our website, MomentumAustralia.org. Encourage you to have a look around our website. We've got some resources on there. You can have a look at previous shows. And of course, again, if you'd like to financially support us at Momentum, we'd really, really appreciate your support. MomentumAustralia.org. That's it for this week's show. My big thanks to Nick, Des, of course, as always. And we'll catch you next week right here on Momentum.
You've been listening to Momentum, a show that helps men succeed in life. For more information or to hear this week's show again, go to MomentumAustralia.org. You can also access a whole range of resources to help you on your journey and to get in touch with the team at MomentumAustralia.org. Until next time, keep moving forward with Momentum.